Good morning. 6:39 a.m. on Friday the 13th. Have you patted your black cat today? And I didn't realize today was Friday the 13th until I looked at the readout on the phone this morning and realized it could be fun. Let's see. Weigh in this morning was good. I was down a little bit. I got one more day for this week. Official weigh-in is tomorrow. See how that works. The bread making is it's going to be a challenge. I was going through the manual yesterday and how to use this bread machine. And I had adjusted for altitude and apparently went the wrong direction. According to the instructions, which actually do have adjustments for high altitude cooking with the bread machine, I went the wrong way. I should have added liquid, not reduced liquid. I'm a little confused by that. I think I could have easily munged it up, so yeah, it's probably right. I'm going to trust that they knew what they were doing. So I made a new loaf, because I went through the first loaf relatively quickly. And the first loaf was sawdust. When it was fresh, it wasn't too bad. When it was hot, it wasn't too bad. When it was toasted, it was a bit dry, which toast usually is, so it wasn't too bad. When I made a sandwich out of it, it just fell apart. So there wasn't enough internal structure in it. Because of the wheat flour, I'm sure. So I modified the recipe, put in more white flour, less wheat flour, put in more milk, because it said add more liquid. I did that. And the next loaf came out okay, except that it did a really good job rising. It did a really good job filling in and mixing. But the problem with it was that it... good morning. The problem with it was that it fell. And I don't know if it fell because perhaps I didn't have the tray stuck in correctly. I noticed that when I was working with it, it felt a little bit wobbly. It felt like it wasn't exactly seated right. And I figured out why it wasn't actually seated correctly. So it's entirely possible that a misloading of the pan resulted in some mix up on the kneading cycle or something. So I suspect I'll wind up making another loaf today, if not tomorrow. And we'll see how it works after that. So writing yesterday was good. I did a lot of reading yesterday and found a couple of places. I'm really happy with the first 100 pages. I'm getting a lot of detail feedback on this, that, or the other, particularly relating to Rebecca. It's difficult to really assess Rebecca and the shipboard scenes in particular, because I've had so many changes to the fundamental underlayment of that particular section. They spend some time on the road, and they spend a short time actually in the town of Cleesport, in the city, and then the rest of the story takes place on shipboard at sea. And, there's some things we could have done differently. And I'll be moving into that section probably today. I'm pretty pleased with the way the city section works. I need to deal with the ship captains and the time after Frank leaves. So that'll be on the docket for my 3 hours of riding this morning. So I'm looking forward to that. So apparently I ate a lot of empty calories yesterday. It's a part of the tracking tool, the choosemyplate.gov tool keeps track of, because I put in which food I eat, it counts empty calories, which is, I think, helpful. And I popped over yesterday for the first time in ever, as far as I remember. I'd have to go back and actually check the last couple of weeks' worth. But it's all right. It wasn't by very much, and I'm not sure I agree with some of them. I was still under in total, so the total number of calories was short. The indicator is that perhaps nutrition might have also fallen a little shy yesterday. I know I didn't eat as much fruit. The bananas are beginning to run out. The oranges have rather gone the way. When I peel an orange, if it smells moldy, no, I'm not going to eat it. So oranges shouldn't smell moldy. It's one of the rules. So, yeah, I need to get to the grocery store again today. Get some more fruit. I did cook sweet potatoes on the grill yesterday, and they came out pretty good, in spite of the fact that they got really badly burned. The fire was perhaps too hot for them. And I also tried to do them without any olive oil. And the thing about the oil that I had overlooked is that the hot oil helps distribute the heat. And while olive oil has a low smoke point, that is, it burns relatively quickly, it also adds a bit of flavor and distributes the heat more evenly into the pores of the food that's being cooked, into the little chasms in the surfaces of the food. It helps distribute it more uniformly across the food. And so you get a better cooking dynamic with using a little bit of oil. So I've got some more. I'll try it again. Try it with a lower fire. I'm really enjoying having sweet potatoes around a lot. I'm going to figure out, there's probably a way to boil them. I hate to boil them because roasting them and cooking them on the grill is not leaching any of the nutrients out, although I'm sure the heat breaks down some. So I'll have to work on that. My next goal. Laurie, my sister, sent me a huge file yesterday on seeing, on this notion of this psychic power of sight, of healing. It was very interesting, and there's a lot of stuff in there that I need to kind of let work on a bit. This notion of crone power is not unheard of in mythology, at least not as unheard of as I had thought. She mentioned several instances of it, so it's kind of interesting. I'm immensely grateful for that, because it's good to hear some alternate perspective. It's good to hear some ideas. Oh, and I did get an email about bone set. Bone set, there are two kinds of bone set. One is a dengue fever remedy called bone set. It is not the one I'm talking about. Bone set or bone stitch is a poultice made of comfrey leaves, not the African remedy that's taken internally, but an actual poultice that's used. And the active ingredient is allotonin, which comes in regular in relatively high concentrations in mature leaves and in the roots of the comfrey plant. Now, the exact mechanism of bone healing isn't clear to me, but the allotonins, in theory, would improve blood circulation and therefore facilitate healing in the soft tissue that surrounds the bone that frequently gets displaced when a bone is broken. So if that gets healed up faster, if that recovers more quickly, then that would result in improved blood flow around the break, which should foster more rapid healing. Now, whether or not this is true, or whether or not it actually works, I don't know. As the theory, it seems plausible to me, and so that's the general place that's going. I'm really grateful for all the people who are helping out here in terms of sending me these ideas and giving me alternate perspectives on what you think I'm saying, what I am saying, and where things are working or not. I'm really encouraged by the degree to which the beta readers are really drawn into this story and are engaged at a level that I'm really gratified about. So cool. Now I'm over halfway. I've got about 3/4 of a mile to go. I'm trying to think of what I'm going to talk about. Education, perhaps. Now, I know. One of the people that I follow in education is a teacher in Snow Lake, I want to say Saskatchewan, up in Canada. And he's been very active in the blogosphere. He's worked with Vicki Davis in the Open Classroom or the Flat Classroom Initiative, where his students in Canada collaborate with a group of students in Georgia and another group in LA, and they've worked in Dubai, and I don't know where else they've worked anyway. So here's a guy who's plugged into education and technology, and he's also just, in an odd twist, he's also been elected mayor of his village. So he gets to sit on both sides of the desk for a while. So I'm finding it quite a challenge. He hasn't been posting as frequently as he did, not surprisingly. With having two jobs, I suspect that he's stretched a little bit thin. But one of his posts yesterday was about tools and about something that Marshall McLuhan said, which was, we shape our tools, and after that, our tools shape us. And that's a pretty common extract from, I think it's McLuhan's Understanding Information, 1964. Clarence has the citation on his blog post. I think it's evenfromhere.com. But if you Google remote access as a phrase, and then Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R, I think. Anyway, so he had this thing, and he's pretty tech savvy. And he had, his image was of an old Model 1 iPod. It was like an inch thick. It's bigger than most cell phones. With the big white click wheel on the front. One of the old school ones with the silver back. And what he was talking about was the interaction of people and texts. And he's talking about all kinds of texts, not just textbooks, but texts in the sense of the classical sense of a text as some sort of unit of information. And that how using an app to read, using an app to connect the reader to other readers, to connect the work itself across a network of people who may or may not be reading it at the moment, but perhaps have read it in the past and left commentary on it. These all occur in a closed garden. That is, if you're on Kobo, then your commentary about the book that you're reading on your Kobo app only goes to other Kobo readers. Only if you do it on Amazon, it only goes to other Kindle readers. And so, is there a bifurcation in what we term literacy based on those people who have access to these applications compared to people who are still reading in paper and lack that network ability that the ebook gives? And his question was, is it significant to us that corporate entities and institutions are now shaping what we might be considering as literacy? I thought it was an interesting question, in large part because it sort of implied that they weren't doing it already, that they hadn't been doing it for the last half century or longer, that what constitutes literacy has for a long time, at least as long as the educational testing service has been going. The SATs and the ACTs and the other tests that determine a student's readiness, for example, to go on to college, have been really determining what constitutes literacy. One of the fastest ways to change curriculum in the United States is to change the SAT. Add a new item to the SAT, add a new content area to the SAT. Education in the United States changes. It has to change, and it has to change almost overnight. So this notion of educational momentum is really one that's governed by corporate input more than it is perhaps by institutional bias, which I think is an interesting point and one that's important to make. The other point is that while Apple, and it was the Apple experience that he was using as an example, Apple is one set of tools, but it's not the only set of tools. When we were in a non-internet environment, we weren't really given a set of tools. We were given a set of limited choices that sort of hinted that we had a choice of tools. So we could order from a catalog, but if it wasn't in the catalog, then we couldn't really choose it, could we? It's like Henry Ford's famous aphorism, you can have any color you want as long as it's black. So it's a false choice, and has been a false choice for at least half a century. It might even be longer than that. This idea that we get to choose, and that choice is not governed by corporate entities, which I think is interesting, because it most certainly has been governed by corporate entities. The changes in publishing, the ones that I'm most engaged with on a daily basis, because I'm engaged in publishing on a daily basis, on production and creation of texts, even though they're not nonfiction texts, they're not instructional texts, the changes there have given more choice. It's still not 100%, but the choices are no longer completely controlled by corporate entities. Yes, the corporate entity still has a higher than average level of influence. As long as we continue to value real publication as composed compared to blogging or self-pub or the other kinds of ideas, It's going to continue. But for the first time in what may be half a millennium, what may be since the invention of the printing press, might be the fact that companies, or in this newest age, corporations, aren't the ones who have the sole capability to set the agenda. And that's an important idea, because the tools exist to cause and enable people to create their own texts, to create their own reality in a way, to be shaped by the tools of their own choosing, not necessarily just by the tools that are made available to them by the corporations. And I think I left him along, actually, two comments on his post, but I think it's an interesting thing to think about, this notion of the tools shape us. And we do have a choice now that we didn't have 20 years ago about which tools shape us and how we let them work on us. So kind of a deep set of thinking for the Friday the 13th edition. And I'm at the back gate, so I'll say tomorrow's another day, and I'll talk to you then.